This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. We got a big hour coming your way. Trey Gowdy's coming to join us, former chairman of the House Oversight Committee in government. How does he feel about all the Biden people just taking the fifth rather than tell us just honestly, was Joe Biden asleep at the switch? Was he mentally failing? Did he make any decisions at all? It would be something if it was true that he was making these decisions hands-on as Trump or Bush or Clinton or Obama. Then you would love to say it, but you wouldn't be taking the fifth. We'll talk to Trey Gowdy about that. He's been down that road before with Hillary Clinton. And keep in mind, too, if you ever want to get the podcast, if you ever say, I can't listen live, go to anywhere you get the podcast or go to the Fox News app and hear the show live at any point. But you could also get the podcast, too. So it's going to be a big day. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I know it's a hoax. It's started by Democrats. It's been run by the Democrats for 4 years. You had Christopher Wray and these characters and Comey before him. It's all been a big hoax. It's perpetrated by the Democrats.
Well, yep. President of the United States, president reeling off win after win, including two yesterday with the crypto bill and the rescission of spending up to $9 billion. But his party's obsessed with the Epstein story, and Trump is not taking it well. We discuss.
Number two.
It should not be lost that the president of the United States of America is using ICE as his own militarized force to engender and institute anxiety and fear.
Mayor Brandon Johnson, an epic fail in Chicago as his city falls apart, thinks ICE is the problem. ICE reality check as yet another agent is seriously hurt, rounding up the worst of the worst from coast to coast as Dems look to paint them, ICE, as the enemy. A new version of the defund the police.
Number one.
I think he's a very personable, smart young man.
Zohran Mamdani is an incredible talent. It's hard not to be won over.
You have AOC and Zohran. That's a winning combo.
Really? Where? Where does that win? Is that the future of the Democratic Party? A Marxist, Zohran Mamdani, impresses Dems with his smile and socialism as he takes D.C. in an effort to ride to success in New York City in that mayoral race. Remember, he's got the Democratic nomination. Cuomo, Sliwa, and Adams jockey for the chance to take him down. We'll see how that goes. So who is this guy? Well, he decided yesterday to show up in D.C. Okay, he's going to go to brunch. Fine. Got a few reporters there. It's big news. A lot of people are stunned that the leadership in the Democratic Party, like Jeffries, like Schumer, have not endorsed him. Governor Hochul not endorsed him. All Democrats, what's going on? What's the delay? 1 by 10? Why are you delaying? What's happening? Well, they have a brunch, and they change venues. Quickly, the reporters are all out of place. They have to scramble to get there. What? They missed his entrance. And you know what he does? He sneaks out the back door. Why? Because when he shows up, he answers questions. And the answers he gives are horrendous, I think, for the country. Yet some socialist squad members love it, but the squad would never get elected nationally, and the party needs a standard bearer, and they might look at him. The same guys that show up for AOC and Bernie Sanders in their oligarchy tour are the ones that are supporting him. So who is this guy? Fascinating to find out. Mr. Defund the Police, send a social worker to domestic disputes, make domestic disputes like jaywalking tickets. I don't like capitalism. Here's Matt Slater, who works with him in the Albany Assembly. Cut 11.
I mean, a Mamdani win here is going to propel a communist agenda all across this country. And that's why AOC, who I grew up with, had brought him down to Washington because Democrats all across the country are concerned not just about his radical agenda, but his radical record. If you look at what he's done in the assembly where I currently serve, he stood on the state legislature floor and he actually referred to his colleagues as his comrades. When you look at the legislation that he sponsored, it is right out of Karl Marx's playbook. And so I think Democrats across the country are very concerned about what this will mean for not just their own self, but across but for the entire country.
And the weird thing is, he does answer questions, and they're not good answers, in my view. They're terrible answers. But Matt Slater knows what he's about. Cut 14.
Do you think that he's somebody that would moderate their positions if he is elected into office? Sometimes you could be very idealistic until reality sets in.
I don't think so. And we saw his meeting recently with CEOs here in New York City, and he was very clear that he's not walking back his policies or his beliefs. And so he's already showing us the fact that he is an ideologue. He has no intention of walking back his radical policy whatsoever. And yes, he can be very charming. And, you know, when he's here, he can charm the birds out of the trees. But at the end of the day, he has to be able to perform and ask to be able to deliver for New York. And that agenda, that communist agenda, and the president called him a communist the other day, and I think he's 100% right, that just won't fly.
It won't. And he doesn't like capitalism. I keep referring to that. And the thing is, they want to just gloss over it. We had Ro Khanna on today. He says, oh, he's a charming guy, he's a good guy, and I'm going to support him. Well, he's a socialist. Yeah, I'm not. Well, why are you supporting him then? I mean, Sean Fetterman, Joe Manchin, moderate Democrats would never support him. These other liberal Democrats have not said they're going to support him yet. They can't figure it out. Right now, the polls are tightening up, but he does have a lot of money behind him, and now he's got the establishment behind him because he won the primary. Here's some Democrats weighing in after the meeting yesterday. Note the second one. The first one's Debbie Dingell from Michigan. The second one is a congressman from California, Mark Takano. Cut two.
You know what? Donald Trump and he both get out and they talk to people and they listen to people and they understand how people feel. And he's using social media the way that Donald Trump has.
What I see is someone addressing cost of living issues. And I think if you were to run these Zoran Mamdani commercials blind in front of self-identified conservatives, part of the MAGA base, I think they would find Mamdani very, very appealing.
Takano went on to say that he's a capitalist with a small C. No, he's not. You could say whatever you want, but the problem is he will tell you the opposite. So he's telling you he's proud of this. I was just speaking to someone who was in London, and they said they are all excited about the mayor race. Why? Because London's gone almost full Muslim. Nothing wrong with Muslims, but I just don't think that Sharia law should be part of New York City. And I'm pretty sure it's little by little taking over enclaves of this historic city of London. I don't want that here. No interest in that. So I'm amazed. And we'll talk about that. And the thing is, it's a bigger story. The bigger story is, where's the Democratic Party? You got Barack Obama out there saying, be more understanding with boys and men in our society. Him saying that we got too politically correct for a while. Good luck with that. No one's listening. Reince Priebus has looked at this as an analyst and said, wow, this is a big story. This is a big story, cut eight.
They don't lack the courage to at least call out global intifada. I mean, some of this stuff is just, you know, it's just common sense. But the real problem is that they're the only ones that can get a crowd, right? So here's the thing. Extreme economic leftism is pretty new in modern American politics. I mean, Occupy Wall Street, Bernie Sanders, AOC, and he's couching all of this in sort of this left populistic type language.
So there you go. He's embracing it. They're just trying to hide him, and they don't know what to do with him. We'll watch that story. So the other thing is President Trump's Republican Party. Not only did they get the big, beautiful bill, they're about to pass cryptocurrency rules and regulations, which, listen, I'm not the biggest crypto guy, can't really explain it, but the president of the United States says there's a huge revenue stream possibility here. He has David Sachs and other experts around him as czars. And he says, let's get some organization that allows it to grow responsibly. They want it. Great. Then he gets this other rescission package, second one in history, where you looked at a budget and said, let's eliminate some spending after it passed. $9 billion, extremely tough, but they did it. That's another victory. But Donald Trump is angry, and he's angry because his own party is obsessed with the Epstein story because they didn't get the paperwork they wanted, the list that may or not exist. And the president's getting a lot of questions about it. And the thing is, these are the people like Theo Von and other podcasters that, you know, he is bonded with, impressed. And now they're deciding that he might not be worth it. Marjorie Taylor Greene, a sitting congresswoman, one of the biggest, one of the most radical on either side that the president has defended. Cut 27.
Will you ask Attorney General Pam Bondi to release more documents to finally put this controversy to bed?
You know, whatever's credible, she can release it. If a document is credible, if a document's there that is credible, she can release. Yeah. I think it's good. It's just a subject. He's dead. He's gone. And all it is the Republicans, certain Republicans, got duped by the Democrats, and they're following a Democrat playbook.
And the Democrats are suddenly interested in this story that revolves around mostly Democrats. I mean, this is Bill Clinton and his ilk. This is Bill Gates and others. Yeah, Trump and Epstein, they were both in Florida at the time. If you think that there was anything on Trump and Epstein that Joe Biden and his administration didn't bring forward, you are crazy. So here's Trump. He's ticked off at his own side. You know, people like Steve Bannon and others. Cut 28.
But I lost a lot of faith in certain people, yeah. I lost. Because they got duped by the Democrats. The Democrats are good for nothing. They've done a terrible job. They almost destroyed our country. If I didn't get elected, all these numbers you're hearing about, they found $25 billion and another 25 is coming in and hundreds of billions of dollars is pouring into our country.
He's ticked off. He's ticked off. And he's letting them know from the people that, you know, they said that he had a wide net. When you get RFK in there and J.D. Vance, two people that disagree, and you have Marco Rubio, more traditional Republican, usually Secretary of State, maybe your MVP, someone very different from, let's say, Tulsi Gabbard. That was a plus. But now we're seeing, as soon as there's a bit of tension about, now, should Pam Bondi have said, hey, I got this, I have the Epstein list on my desk and you guys can all have it and made copies and sent it out and there's nothing in there and then says that's it. Maybe the way it's handled wasn't great. But if you think a special counsel is going to be launched, you're nuts. If you think that Pam Bondi's going to do a special counsel on herself, you only do that if it's a conflict of interest. There's no conflict of interest. You think she was involved with Epstein? So if there's anything out there, put it out. But I'm with the President of the United States 100% on this. As Britt Hume told us yesterday, I'm going to take a timeout and tell me if you think I'm wrong. You think you want to know more about Epstein? You think the president let you down? I'm actually too interested in consequential things. I talked to the head of the EU today, their trade council, and that deal will put millions of dollars in America's pockets, raise the market through the roof, help with all your mutual funds, if that's you, or your 401k. I think that's next. Finding out what Iran's doing with their crowdsourcing and getting millions of dollars to assassinate Trump, I think that's a big deal, let alone what's happening in Ukraine. I don't think this other thing is anything but a distraction. Trey Gowdy in 15 minutes. Your call's next.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Following Fox's initial donation to the Kerr County Flood Relief Fund, our generous viewers have answered the call to action across all Fox platforms and have helped raise $7 million. Visit go.fox/TX Flood Relief to support relief and rebuilding efforts.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome to IMO. Look at you.
Wait, you guys like each other?
Oh, yeah, really, huh?
That's so
the
nice
rumor mill. It's my husband, y'all.
She took me back.
Now, don't start.
I can't.
It was touch and go for a while.
It's so nice to have you both in the same room together.
I know,
because when we aren't, folks think we're divorced.
Right. That is Craig Robinson doing his podcast with Michelle Obama's sister, and then Barack Obama was a guest today. So having fun with the fact that I get divorced. I'm happy for them. They're not, but they just, you know, they don't seem to be speaking highly of each other. Excuse me. She doesn't speak that highly of him. I think there's still resentment that he was away a lot when the kids were growing up. I'm not sure, but she definitely never misses a chance to go after him. Here's more from Michelle Obama when she talks about their marriage, cut 32.
There hasn't been one moment in our marriage where I thought about quitting my man. And we've had some really hard times. So we had a lot of fun times, a lot of adventures. And I have become a better person because of the man I'm married to.
Okay. Don't make me cry now. Right at the beginning of the show.
That's
sweet. Don't let me start tearing up now.
So there you go. Do you feel better about it, Allison? Do you feel better about their marriage?
You know, I can now finally sleep through the night.
I mean, there's all this stuff about him and Jennifer Aniston.
I mean, I think that's what was crazy.
You do?
She's dating someone else now.
Right.
Some health guru. Didn't see that?
Well, I mean, if he was going to do something, he'd be crazy to do it with one of the most famous people in the country.
That's true. I do think everyone just wanted to embellish all of it. It probably got a lot of clicks. People bought a lot of the tabloids over it. Marriages are hard. Like, there are ups and downs. So maybe they're just on a bit of a down, but that doesn't mean you're getting divorced.
She doesn't seem too, like, happy that he was president and he's a big achiever. She could be a little bit more grateful.
I think she appreciated it, but she always said she didn't want to get into politics, but she then didn't stop him.
Right. So what is the deal? He did come out. I don't know if we pulled that soundbite. Came out and talked about boys. Now, like, their big thing is toughen up. He gives this advice. And he said, you better toughen up, Democrats, and stop navel-gazing. You got to go out there. I think it's terrible advice. If you're Barack Obama, the professor, the Ivy League grad, why aren't you coming up with ideas of what to do about fill the gap on whatever Republicans aren't doing? How to handle immigration? How to handle trans men in sports? How to not get involved with loser situations like backing up a train to nowhere that's no longer going to be funded after billions of dollars? And then he brings up things like, you know, the political correctness of what happened during the pandemic. Now he doesn't bring it up to Joe Biden, who knows if he could have retained it, or his campaign. But now he's realizing maybe we overcorrected in giving women's rights and girls' rights. I know it's long with him. Nothing's ever direct. But listen to President Obama talk about boys.
I will say, as quote unquote progressives, Democrats, progressive parents, enlightened ones, we've made that mistake sometimes in terms of our rhetoric, where it's like we're constantly talking about it, you know, what's wrong with the boys, mm-hmm. instead of what's right with them. Mm-hmm. We rightly have tried to invest in girls to make sure that there's a level playing field and then they're not barred from opportunities. But we haven't been as willing, I think, to be intentional about investing in the boys, and that's been a mistake. And I think people are starting to recognize that.
Hey, a couple of things. Number one, I don't expect the president to invest in boys or girls, but you could set a tone. You could set a tone a little bit more open. We're all past the whole America sucks, 1619 Project, George Floyd stuff. We're done with it. DEI, affirmative action, men are terrible. Minorities are the best. White people are the worst. We're done. If you even look at the president's administration, he's got an Asian guy, and Stephen Chung doing communications. He's got a woman as attorney general. You know, he's got Kash Patel from Indian background, FBI director. But you know what's not happening? He doesn't say it. He doesn't say a woman fighter pilot helped bomb out the nuclear program of the Iranians. She's just a fighter pilot. I love it. Now he's jumping in here. I would give him so much more credit if he was making the comments without the comedic flair of Bill Maher. And say, I don't know, I can't recognize his play. Bill Clinton, too. And by the way, I think that if Barack Obama came out and said, don't think the socialist in New York winning the Democratic primary bears well for the whole country, I think that takes courage. That's a standard bearer. At 63 years old, he could still be that.
You know that one friend who somehow knows everything about money? Yeah, now imagine they live in your phone. Say hey to Experian, your big financial friend. It's the app that helps you check your FICO score, find ways to save, and basically feel like a financial genius. And guess what? It's totally free. So go on, download the Experian app. Trust me, having a BFF like this is a total game changer.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think he's a very personable, smart young man.
It's just beautiful to have someone who is so authentic. You know, that money cannot buy that.
Zohran Mamdani is an incredible talent. It's hard not to be won over.
You have AOC and Zohran. That's a winning combo.
This guy is not a communist. He's not a socialist. He's an advocate for small C capitalism.
Okay, Congressman Mark Takana was the last one. I have news for you. He calls himself a socialist. He does not like capitalism. So you could spin it all you want, but he's not asking you to spin it. One person who was not involved in the montage of praise, because we just didn't have the time to get a soundbite from him, is Trey Gowdy. He's the former chairman of the House Oversight Committee. We know about his great show on Sunday Night in America with Trey Gowdy. Trey, could you say something promising about the man who won the Democratic primary to be the next mayor of New York City so I could add you to the montage next hour?
Yes, I have one thing to say complimentary of him. He may be the single best thing to happen to the Republican Party in the last 20 years.
That is, I'm going to put that right in. Allison, would you be able to edit that in? Thank you very much. I agree with you. I mean, but he's proud of all these things, you know, globalized, intifada, all these things. I agree with the sentiment. Maybe I wouldn't use those words. He says, I'm not a capitalism, don't like billionaires, don't want to defund the police. So their goal now, Trey, is to keep away from microphones.
Well, there are a couple of things that I think you could add to that. I don't know another soul that wants to tax people based on race while you also lie about your own race to get ahead.
Oh, yeah. I don't know
that I know anyone who wants to arrest Benjamin Netanyahu, but not Hamas.
Mm-hmm.
So if their goal is to make AOC look moderate, then they found the right guy. If your goal is to run the largest city, one of the most important cities in the world, then you are going to have a mass exodus from New York, Brian. And we would welcome you in South Carolina. We're not going to have any of that. I'm serious. People are going to vote with their feet. And so how you can – all those tall skyscrapers, I don't think they were built with socialism. I think they were built with capitalism. So the choices weren't great. Cuomo's not a great choice. Mamdani is an awful, awful choice. People are going to start voting with their feet. They already are. There's out migration in New York.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because as I was talking to Senator Manchin yesterday, and he said, keep in mind, whatever you think of them, they're getting the crowds. So AOC and Bernie Sanders getting huge crowds. Mamdani will get a huge crowd, and he does have a big social media presence. If he goes out, he'll get a bigger crowd. So what does it tell you?
That you have a disaffected population in our country.
Yep.
That are susceptible to, everybody needs an enemy. Everybody needs, I say everybody, normal people don't. Normal people look in the mirror and say, okay, let me find the problem. Other people look elsewhere and say, the reason I'm not ahead is because of you. You also have white guilt. You also have, you know, people that were born on third base with the guilt that comes with that. So if you look at who's voting for Mamdani, I'll just tell you what I do not understand. I don't understand how an African-American voter who really probably did face obstacles based on the color of his or her skin could possibly countenance someone who lied about his race and now wants to tax people based on their race. If that's where New York is headed, I think the world's most important city is not going to be there much longer.
But he was born in Africa, Uganda, and he wrote African American.
Right. I was born at Greenville Memorial Hospital, but I'm not a doctor. So I know. So what? I mean, my parents might have been on vacation in what used to be Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe. That does not make me Rhodesian, Zimbabwean. If there's nothing wrong with your own background, Donnie, why'd you lie about it? People don't lie because they think it's going to hurt them. They lie because they think it's going to help them. It's like Elizabeth Warren. I mean, Native American? Seriously? Because you have light-colored eyes? I guess that makes me Cherokee because I have blue eyes.
That's true. She says her bone structure, just for the record. I guess
who says certain studies their bone structure?
I'm not sure.
get out of the mirror and join the real world. I tell you what, though, Brian. I like New York because my bosses are in New York. But the reality is, the rest of the country doesn't think about New York that often. Mm-hmm. And if the face of your party is AOC, Mamdani, and Gavin Newsom, then your party is going to be a minority party for a long time.
I hear you. Trey Gowdy, our guest, his book is coming out. It's called The Color of Death, a novel, and it comes out in August. So I want to get to it, but I also want to talk to you about something that's frustrating the president. You know, I'm reading Mark Thiessen's column in the Washington Post today. You know, he's a conservative columnist, but he'll call you out, especially, you know, when it comes to Ukraine or other things. You know, he has no problem doing it. George will and other, but the president's on a winning streak. And if you look at, too, the rescission package that's about done, and how he's got regulations when it comes to cryptocurrency, let alone the big, beautiful bill, the guy's got a winning streak. He did what four presidents decided not to do, and that's bombed out Iran's nuclear program where they wouldn't come to the table. He's close, I believe, with something with Hamas in Israel. But he is frustrated because everyone keeps talking about Epstein, including most of the people on his side. Before I find out what you think, Trey, here's the president yesterday about so many people on the right, the podcasters, who seem angry at him. Cut 28.
But I lost a lot of faith in certain people. Yeah, I lost because they got duped by the Democrats. The Democrats are good for nothing. They've done a terrible job. They almost destroyed our country. If I didn't get elected, all these numbers you're hearing about, they found $25 billion in another 25 is coming in, and hundreds of billions of dollars is pouring into our country.
Got Candace Owens, others out there saying that they're disenchanted with the president of the United States because of the Epstein files. Tell me where we're at with this.
Yeah, well, I haven't said a whole lot about it because I look at it from a prosecutorial standpoint.
Yep.
And I think the deal he got in Florida was ridiculous. I would rather lose that case than give it away. So what do we know? There's a co-conspirator sitting in prison serving a 20-year sentence. You can't conspire with yourself. So who did she conspire with? Are you willing to cut her sentence to get information from her? Because she's not going to do it out of a sense of civic duty. Even if the statute of limitations has run on the criminal part of it, Brian, I put hurting children up there tied for number one with murder in terms of seriousness from a former prosecutor. So I don't think there's any statute of limitations on knowing people who hurt children or aided and abetted the same. The challenge is when prosecutors try to win the press conference but don't want to win the trial. So if you have evidence of criminality against anyone, take them to court. If you have evidence of criminality but the statute is run, then I want to see it because I don't want to support someone who would go to an island to take advantage of underage girls. Now, the part that I find stunning is some of the same people who are criticizing the president are calling for a special prosecutor named Matt Gaetz. You cannot be serious about hurting underage people and want Matt Gaetz to be a special prosecutor, unless you want Hannibal Lecter to be the White House chef. Why in the world would you pick somebody who left Congress because of similar issues? So if you want to be serious about it, then prosecute anyone who was involved with Jeffrey Epstein if the statute hasn't run. And if there is no – look, I trust Kash Patel. Brian, you know I worked side-by-side with him for 2 years. I didn't hear Kash – well – you know, there may have been interviews in the past about releasing it, but once you get there and see what the evidence is or what the file is, then you, I mean, maybe they shouldn't have said it the first time. Maybe there was nothing there. But the battle and who's picking sides, I bet 0% of those folks have actually seen what I consider evidence. So I'm not interested in feelings. I'm not interested in opinions. I'm interested in what people know, what they can prove, and the facts. And unless I see those files or the absence of information, then my opinion is uninformed.
So you just want to see more information, and if you have it, just bring it out. That's what Mike Johnson said yesterday, the speaker. He said he wants more disclosure from the administration. It's a very delicate subject, he said, but we should put everything out there and let the people decide. What would be the reluctance to letting people, putting everything out there?
There should be no reluctance because, I mean, what somebody may say is the statute of limitations is run. And then I would say there is no statute of limitations to me on the truth when it comes to hurting children. So technically, can you prosecute somebody after the statute is run? No. But do I want to know that some famous person or some rich person went to an island and took advantage of underage girls? Yes, I want to know that because that person needs to be named, shamed, and ostracized. There's more than one way to punish people in our culture, Brian. I mean, everybody gets focused on prison, yes, but there's also shame and the loss of respect and the loss of business. There are other ways to punish people. Here's what I don't know. What was sitting on Pam's desk? So there's a reason that Cash and Pam and Bongino are arguing with one another. Either stuff existed or it did not exist. And I don't know Dan that well, despite the fact that he worked for Fox. I know Cash very, very well. Mm-hmm. I'm just telling you, Cash Patel is not going to say nothing exists if there's evidence of children being hurt. He's just not going to do it.
So where would you go from here? You've seen a lot of interesting situations before.
I'd tell you exactly where I'd go. There's a guy named Michael Horowitz. So Horowitz is the inspector general for DOJ. He's the reason you know about Peter Strzok's text. He's the reason you know that Jim Comey had memos. He's the reason you know that Jim Comey was writing his exoneration press conference speech before he ever interviewed Hillary Clinton, because he is a real investigator. He's the inspector general for DOJ, and I would say, Michael, you call balls and strikes. And oftentimes, he's already investigated the alleged suicide of Jeffrey Epstein. He wrote an entire report on it. I wonder how many people have read that report. I wonder
how many
people have talked to him about it. I had him on my podcast because I said, look, Horowitz, it is suspicious to have a missing minute. It is suspicious. You got to help me with that. Listen to his explanation for it. Horowitz was confirmed unanimously by the Senate. He is extraordinarily well-respected on both sides. So who in our culture are people going to believe if they come out and say, this is what we have and this is what we don't have? It's a small group, but Horowitz is in that group. He's the inspector general for DOJ, and I would say, Mr. Horowitz, you write an exhaustive report on what existed, what exists now, whether or not the evidence has been corroborated. I mean, Ghislaine Maxwell may start naming names, but she's got an incentive to lie. She wants to get out of prison. It's got to be corroborated. Nobody believed her when she said she did nothing wrong, so why would you believe her now? It's got to be corroborated. I need to see corroboration for the allegations, and I want to see it. I want to see it. I understand the president's frustration because it is detracting away from his victories, which have been pretty historic. But it wasn't me who said, I've seen the videos. It wasn't me who said the files are sitting on my desk. And it wasn't you. Yeah. So you can't write checks with your mouth that the rest of your body can't cash.
So you think that Horowitz might be the ticket. Is he still working for the DOJ?
Yes.
I did not know that.
He's one of the few inspector generals that survived. And I think he survived because he is universally respected.
Yeah.
I mean, he found the Peter Strzok text. Think about how much that changed the game.
Everything.
When we found it. Yes. So Congress didn't find it. The FBI didn't come forward with it. Michael Horowitz found it.
So, Trey, tell me about the color of death. I know we got a month, but can you give us an idea of what we can expect?
You know what, Brian? I want you to go and sit in the front seat with me from the moment a murder happens until we solve it and take it to court. So there are lots of miniseries about cops and defense attorneys and defendants who didn't really do it. Find me a miniseries, a book, a movie about the role that prosecutors really play. And I don't mean like The Time to Kill with Matthew McConaughey and Kevin Spacey where you show up the morning of trial. That is not real life. Real life is the prosecutor is there the night the murder takes place. And he or she is the quarterback of the investigation. I'm going through it right now, a case I prosecuted 20 years ago that is still alive because he's on death row. So the relationship with the victims, which is unique, the relationship between prosecutors and cops. So, yeah, it is fiction in that the characters are made up. But if you really want what truly happens in a murder case from a prosecutorial standpoint, and that is the quarterback of the team, then this book puts you in the driver's seat with all of the grief. Brian, I still run into – I mean, you remember Susan Smith and what she did to her two sons. I still from time to time run into her husband. And there is a bond between prosecutors and the victims of crime or the family.
And that comes out in this book, so because you feel this.
It is. You want to live the roller coaster of murder and what it does to everybody involved. This book takes you on that trip.
Trey Gowdy, pick it up now. Pre-order now. The Color of Death, the novel. And then watch his show Sunday night at 9 o'clock, and I'm lucky enough to follow him.
And then watch yours, where you, all the good guests want to go to you, and they tell me I can't be up that late. And then I see him on your show.
Your ratings are through the roof. Trey Gowdy, thanks so much. I'll talk to you soon. He's great. What a great suggestion about Michael Horowitz. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Fox News Audio presents Unsolved with James Patterson. Every crime tells a story, but some stories are left unfinished.
Somebody knows.
Real cases, real people. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Shohei Ohtani couldn't make it tonight. Man, I hope his interpreter didn't bet that he was going to be here. Shohei is a once-in-a-generation talent. No one's been able to do what he does at so many positions. Pitcher, hitter, and bookie. A bookie is what Bill Belichick reads to his girlfriend before bedtime. They do. They read The Very Horny Caterpillar, The Little Engine That Could But Needed a Pill First. Also, I'm not trashing Bill Belichick. First off, he's 73 years old and he's dating a hot 24-year-old and people are criticizing him. What happened to this country? It used to be a great country. He won 6 Super Bowls. He's dating a hot 24-year-old. Maybe if you guys won 6 Super Bowls, you wouldn't be sitting next to a fat, ugly dog wife.
So that was Shane Gillis from the ESPYs. He hosted. He had a great Epstein line, too.
He did. I could grab that.
Yeah, we should grab it. I better sample some of that on One Nation this weekend, Sunday at 10. Hey, keep it here. Brian Kilmeade Show. We're just getting started. Also, write me, BrianKilmeade.com. Just click on comments and tell me what's on your mind.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. From the Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening to you, to listen to us. We're at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, but we're a national show heard around the country and world. Ali Reza Jahazova joins us now in studio. Josh Krashauer at the bottom of the hour, Fox News political analyst, editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. And, of course, we got to first get to the big three.
Number three.
I know it's a hoax. It's started by Democrats. It's been run by the Democrats for 4 years. You had Christopher Wray and these characters and Comey before him. It's all been a big hoax. It's perpetrated by the Democrats.
Yup, Trump reeling off win after win, including two yesterday with the crypto bill and the rescission package. But his party is obsessed with the Epstein trial, and Trump is frustrated.
Number two.
It should not be lost that the president of the United States of America is using ICE as his own militarized force to engender and institute anxiety and fear.
Right. If that was the case, that would be interesting, but it's nothing close to the case or reality. That's Mayor Brandon Johnson, possibly Chicago's mayor, the worst in the country. ICE reality check is yet another agent is seriously hurt, rounding up the worst of the worst here illegally. And they're doing it from coast to coast, and they're looking to paint them as the enemy. They're not.
Number one.
I think he's a very personable, smart young man.
Zohran Mamdani is an incredible talent. It's hard not to be won over.
You have AOC and Zohran. That's a winning combo.
Yup, is he the future? Marx's Zohran Mamdani impresses Dems with his smile and socialism as he takes D.C. 11 showed up in an effort to ride his success in New York City to the mayoral race. He has right now taken on Cuomo, Sliwa, and Adams as the old jockey to be the one to try to take him out, if that's indeed possible. One of the big stories for the president of the United States, and I think one of the great success stories, is the way they were able to take out three nuclear sites, as well as the Israelis, with great surveillance and on-the-ground intel, was able to do tremendous damage to the Iranian regime. Ali Raza Jafarzadeh is somebody who's with the deputy director of the Western Office of the National Council of Resistance of Iran. He's also involved with the MEK, which is a group that really wants to see if they could get that that country, I guess, out of the hands of the Ayatollah and everybody else. And Ali Raza joins us now. Ali, welcome back. What's the state of Iran right now?
Well, first of all, thank you so much to be on your show again, as we've done this many years.
Great hope of overturning, but the Ayatollah seems to have some wherewithal.
Well, you know, first of all, what was on display in the past few weeks was the absolute weakness and vulnerability of the Iran regime. Remember, this is a regime that claimed that they control the whole Middle East. They're suppressing their own population, and they always boasted about the power of the Revolutionary Guards, their allies, their proxies in the region. And this weakness was preceded by the severe weakness of their proxies, the Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis, the Shia militias. Their biggest ally in Syria, Assad, is gone. And also remember that we have had several rounds of major uprisings in Iran since 2018. People chanting death to the dictator. They want an end to the rule of the clerics. Death to the oppressor, be it the Shah or the supreme leader, meaning that they're rejecting the past monarchy dictatorship. They're opposed to the current theocracy. They're looking for future. That's what the real story is in Iran. People vying for a much better future.
And now they're just trying to arrest and hang everybody suspected of collaborating with Israel. They seem totally freaked out by what Israel is able to do in a short period of time.
Well, I think what you see now is the very paranoid state the regime is. They're afraid of their own population. They're afraid that if the next round of uprisings come, it will happen in a totally different circumstances. And people feel they're a lot more empowered. The regime's weakness is on display. And the main focus of the regime is on those who are fighting. The Revolutionary Guards are standing up to them, the ones who expose the nuclear sites of Iran. As you mentioned, the MEK. Ironically, just 2 days ago, three members of the MEK who were arrested a few years ago, they were sentenced to death. As we speak, at least 15 members of the MEK are on the death row. And the regime is increasingly focusing on
that.
And
the MEK, how would you describe them?
Well, the MEK is the main organization in Iran that has been fighting the religious dictatorship ruling Iran under the mullahs. They also were opposed to the Shah's dictatorship, the Savak, the secret police, the single-party rule of Savak. And they oppose the Islamic extremist mentality of the Ayatollahs. They're Muslims, but they are vehemently opposed to the mentality of the mullahs. They have women in the leadership. The past nine successive secretaries general of the MEK have all been female. And they're very inspiring to the population. But the biggest threat to the mullahs, because the ideology of the mullahs is based on misogyny. And they are the force for change in Iran. They're part of the coalition of mm-hmm. the National Council of Resistance of Iran that acts as the parliament in exile.
And here he is, the Bahrainian prime minister yesterday with Trump, who was one of the first. They are the first country to sign on to the Abraham Accords. Let's listen.
Well, I definitely believe that the volatility of the situation has been reduced. And we didn't know where it was going to go on the Sunday. We were very glad when we found out on the Monday. Let me put it that way. And should the Iranians want to negotiate, I believe the ball's in their court. That is the true reality of where we stand today. They are the ones that stand to benefit from a negotiation.
And they do. They want to negotiate. They want to negotiate badly. We're in no rush because, you know, we said we could have made a deal. They should have made a deal. And then we bombed the hell out of their various places. We're in no rush, but if they want to negotiate, we're here.
You think they should negotiate? You think they will? If they're smart, they would, because they could get relief from the sanctions and start, you know, they are an evil regime, but they would start rebuilding their economy.
The mullahs have no choice. They came to the negotiating table out of absolute desperation. They, of course, their agenda is different. They want to drag the issue. They want to buy time so that the snapback mechanism at the United Nations Security Council, which would put back all the sanctions on the regime, would expire in October. So they're playing games. They don't want to give up their nuclear weapons program, but they don't want to be facing a situation that they would face much harsher consequences. So negotiations for them is a means to buy time, not to end their nuclear weapons program. And that's why I think it's so important for the United States to push on that and tell them, as they said, you know, if you don't come to the table and accept the terms, you're going to first see the snapback of the sanctions on the regime. That's a huge thing. And then I think the next step at the end of the day, given the behavior of the Iran regime, you need to see change in the country. And, of course, that's the responsibility of the people of Iran. And the president of the United States has correctly said
right.
that the U.S. will not be involved in that. It's the responsibility of the people of Iran. There's no need for boots on the ground or appropriation of money. There are, you know, resistance units in Iran.
Do you think they should have killed the president?
I know there were reports about the attack, that he was wounded and all of that. But at the end of the day, Brian, you know, you have to see a change to the system ruling Iran. And, you know, Iran is a big country with 90 million population, very large. And even in a country like Syria, it's much smaller, much weaker. Change came from within, on the ground. That's where the focus should be, empowering. Creating space for those who are fighting the Revolutionary Guards, recognizing the right of the people of Iran, those, you know, resistance units of the MEK, to confront the Revolutionary Guards. There is no other way to bring about change in the country. You can weaken it. You can build pressure on it. You can hold them accountable for all the things they have done. But at the end of the day, the force for change is coming from Iran.
Right. So how weak are they right now? How much weaker are they now than they were 3 weeks ago?
Well, you know, first of all, they relied heavily on their nuclear program because that was the leverage they were using. It's a guarantee for their survival. That has been badly shattered. And I know there are a lot of discussions about, you know, how much damage and all of that. I think all of that is irrelevant. The fact of the matter is that, you know, there's no way in the world that the regime could actually get back to where they were 2 months ago. They used a very special historic circumstances over the past two decades to build the program and come to here, relying heavily on the policy of appeasement pursued by Europe and several administrations here in the United States. The world didn't know a lot of this, even though we exposed all the major nuclear sites of Iran, but that policy of appeasement helped the regime. That era has changed, and we need to make sure that the regime cannot get back to where they were, cannot benefit from the things they benefited before. We need to also understand that this regime is much more weaker than it was, you know, 20-some years ago. You need to understand also the population in Iran is on the side of, you know, the Western world, and they want to see change. the rejected regime. Mm-hmm. Nothing can rally the people behind the flag. And that's why that's where the focus should be. And take advantage of the weakness of the regime, their vulnerability. Reach out to the organized opposition. You know, interestingly, the movement is led by a female leader, Mrs. Maryam Rajavi. 5 days after the attacks on June 18, she was at the European Parliament. She told the European parliamentarians that 21 years ago I was here and I told you that appeasement will get you to war. And I offered a third option, which is relying on the people of Iran to bring about change. And I repeat that again today.
But they don't have the guns. And the regime has the guns. So what are they going to do?
Well, at the end of the day, when you have the will of the population, they're able to get the guns. They are able to overpower the Revolutionary Guards, as we have seen
in
the cases.
But they haven't done it yet, right? Well, I mean, they haven't done it since 79. We see the uprisings, but we don't see the execution because they don't have the weapons.
Well, remember that in the past four decades, there has been a policy of appeasement that constantly created space for the regime and closed the space on the opposition. You know, remember in 1997 when Khatami, the so-called moderate president, took office, he tried to reach out to the United States. That was Bill Clinton era. And he asked the United States to designate the very same movement that we talked about, the MEK, on the terrorist list. And that's what they did. So the MEK had to fight for 15 years to get off the list. You know, why would you want to harm an organized resistance who is wanting to bring about change and help the regime, given palace of cash? That has to change, and that has significantly changed over the past few months.
Ali Razak, best of luck. Hopefully we'll get a regime change in our lifetime because something has to change in that region. And I think everyone is exposed now, Iran. They're not the big behemoth everyone thought they were. Ali Razak, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Brian. And just think about a free, democratic, non-nuclear republic, Iran. What a difference it will make.
It would be great.
For the whole world.
It would. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Between two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN, you try to be in control of how your info is protected. But many other places also have it, and they might not be as careful. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for 40% off. Terms apply.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Megan Rapinoe could not make it tonight. Nice. No, we're going to pretend she's a good time. All right. Simone Biles is here. Simone Biles is 4'8" and has 7 gold medals. She's short and has a lot of gold. When she's not competing, she leads a quiet life at the base of a rainbow. It's a leprechaun joke. If you tell Simone a riddle and she can't answer it, she has to give you all of her gold medals. Aaron Rodgers did not take the vaccine because he predicted it would be bad for him. And then he joined the New York Jets. So maybe he wasn't right about everything. It's a big year for the WNBA. I love Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark, she and I have a lot in common. We're both whites from the Midwest who have nailed a bunch of threes. When Caitlin Clark retires from the WNBA, she's going to work at a Waffle House so she can continue doing what she loves most, fist fighting black women.
That is so hysterical. I mean, they both hit a bunch of threes. That is so funny. So that was, I mean, that's not even out yet, right? I mean, was that on live?
That was on last night. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got the feed and I snuck in. We're going to air it.
Because I was just thinking that I thought usually they tape this stuff and then they air it later.
That was on last night. Oh. There were plenty of jokes that didn't land, but the ones that did. Also, the Megan Rapinoe with like no one laughed. She's like, you're going to pretend she's a good time. Fantastic.
You know, everybody knows who it is. That's a soccer player that was the first to take a knee. I think the first soccer player.
She just seems angry about everything.
Right. And she is. And, you know, I remember she missed a goal and then she missed a penalty kick. And she said, is this some bad joke? What are you talking about? You just joked. You blew it. You guys lost. And she goes, is this a bad joke? My last game and I missed a penalty kick? No, it's called the life that you're going to have to deal with the rest of your time. I don't know. Hopefully she's not involved with U.S. soccer anymore because she's been a nightmare. So we'll see. So we talked a little bit about Iran to start off with. Don't really start many hours talking about Iran. We're waiting for some regime change there. I'm not hopeful that this will happen because it doesn't seem to ever happen. And the population's courageous, but they're not armed. So I don't know what changes unless something happens from the inside, unless the police force turns on the government, which we could always hope. But let's hope that's even better. But it's hard to imagine that's even worse. Just talking about what's happening in New York City, they have a poll out, and it looks like currently Eric Adams is in fourth place in the New York mayoral race. First place is Mamdani. Cuomo is second. Then you have Curtis Sliwa, and then you have Eric Adams. Eric Adams is going to be on the Sunday show, One Nation, Sunday at 10 o'clock. So I'm very curious when we talk to him where he's going to be at right now, because he got some huge news yesterday. He has got the endorsement of two law enforcement agencies. He got bad news also that he didn't get matching funds of $4 million because of some alleged corruption that took place. I don't think he does the best human resources. If you look at the amount of people that have been fired, been quit, been caught in scandal. But I think he's going to get a lot of people rallying to him because they look at Cuomo as dead in the water. Curtis Sliwa has probably the most promise, would do the best job, but the Republicans are so few and far between. Here's Reince Priebus, cut eight.
They don't lack the courage to at least call out global intifada. I mean, some of this stuff is just, you know, it's just common sense. But the real problem is that they're the only ones that can get a crowd, right? So here's the thing. Extreme economic leftism is pretty new in modern American politics. I mean, Occupy Wall Street, Bernie Sanders, AOC, and he's couching all of this in sort of this left populistic type language.
And that's true. And that's what Joe Manchin mentioned yesterday. However you want to put it down, you want to say this is extreme and niche, fine. But they're getting the big crowds. So the oligarchy tour goes to Idaho, gets a big crowd. They go to Arizona, get a big crowd. They go to the Midwest, they get a big crowd. They think they're resonating. Yeah, there's some people that are coming out to see you. But if you think the vast majority of the country are going to vote for that, you're crazy. That's why I wait for one person to stand up, Westmore, Bashir, not Carville and Pundin, say they'll do anything, but just somebody who has political stakes, somebody who wants to have a political future, just say, yeah, I'm not buying that. Do what Bill Maher does almost on a daily basis. He's a Democrat. But the extreme behavior is never going to work, and you guys got to sober up. Don't pretend that the border isn't a problem. Josh Crash Hour next. We'll discuss all that and more. Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
You know what? Donald Trump and he both get out and they talk to people and they listen to people and they understand how people feel. And he's using social media the way that Donald Trump has.
What I see is someone addressing cost of living issues. And I think if you were to run these Zoran Mamdani commercials blind in front of self-identified conservatives, part of the MAGA base, I think they would find Mamdani very, very appealing.
I don't know what you're talking about. Not they're talking about his smile. They're talking about his presence, his social media. It's what he believes is the problem. Josh Kroshauer joins us now, Fox News Radio political analyst, editor-in-chief at Jewish Insider. Hey, Josh, 11 people showed up in D.C. yesterday. I don't know how many. They all came out and said nice things about him. But a lot of people did not show up to meet the guy who won the Democratic primary of New York City.
Well, and the most important person who didn't show up is the House Minority Leader, Hakeem Jeffries, who is meeting with him, but in New York and far away from the cameras on Capitol Hill. And what's remarkable about the visit, number one, is that no one apparently, according to the readout of the meeting, mentioned anything about his anti-Semitic, you know, this defense of the globalized intifada, anti-Semitic rhetoric that he has still refused to walk back from. And it's, obviously, you have Hakeem Jeffries, Chuck Schumer, a whole host of New York Democratic officials who are withholding their endorsement. And in the case of Jeffries, at least, he's basically saying, you need to walk back your defense of globalized intifada rhetoric. You need to walk back from the anti-Semitism for me to endorse you. Just that very low bar you just have to pass for me to give you the endorsement. And he still hasn't done it. I think it tells you and speaks volumes about Mamdani's ideology, how deeply held these views are, and how far to the left, how radical his ideology truly is.
So, I mean, do they get behind Cuomo? Do they get behind Adams? I don't think they'll get behind Adams because he's too close to Trump. So what do they do?
Well, I mean, it depends who they is, and that's part of the problem, that there's a lot of collective action challenges in New York, that the people running against Mamdani, Cuomo, Adams, and also Curtis Sliwa, the Republican nominee, are more interested in kind of their own self-interest rather than the interest of the city and blocking a very, very extreme candidate. It's interesting. Even there were three polls that came out in the last week and a half in the general election, one of them from basically a pro-Mamdani group. And they all show Mamdani anywhere between 35% and 40%, which is extremely weak for a Democratic nominee.
Oh, yeah.
In New York City. There's no guarantees in politics, but if the anti-Mamdani side of the aisle coalesced, the evidence suggests that this would be a very, very competitive race. The problem is no one wants to drop out. Cuomo is going after Adams. Adams is going after Cuomo, and they're not looking at the real person who's the person who you have to go after to win the mayor's race. And you also see a lot of outside groups, business groups that are just stuck. They're in sclerosis mode. They could say, hey, we're going to get behind. Eric Adams actually had a huge fundraising period. They raised a lot of money right after Mamdani won the Democratic nomination. And there's a lot of signs that he could actually build that coalition. You know, he has African-American voters, probably get Jewish voters, moderate voters. And I think he has some appeal to some Republicans, too. So there is that. I mean, even with the scandals and corruption, I think there's a play for Adams. But no one wants to kind of push that button. No one wants to go there. And it's allowing Mamdani essentially to try to keep trying to work the Democratic Party and get those endorsements.
So it looks like Mayor Adams is expected to get the endorsement of the police and law enforcement unions. That'll certainly help. You mentioned that he does have one problem that popped up yesterday, a 251-page lawsuit filed in the Southern District of New York. He's one of the defendants by the former and temporary police commissioner, Tom Donilon. He alleges systematic corruption, forged documents, obstruction of internal investigation, retaliation against dissenters. Donovan claims that this is not a personal grievance, but called out the entire system. So that's something you would think is made for opposition research.
Yeah. I mean, look, the Adams baggage is priced in. He is very corrupt. He obviously was looking like a dead man walking, politically speaking, because of all that corruption. There have been races in politics before. I think about like the, you know, in Louisiana, David Duke versus Edwin Edwards, where the Democrat slogan was vote for the crook. It's important. You know, if you actually cared about stopping a socialist or a radical from becoming mayor of New York City, you sometimes have to swallow, you have to make concessions given the realities on the ground. And it doesn't seem like a lot of the stakeholders right now in New York City are willing to kind of go that far. They're meeting with Mamdani. It didn't sound like the meeting went all that well, but they're having conversations. I think it's pretty telling that 3 weeks plus since he won the nomination, he still hasn't rebuked the globalized intifada rhetoric that he's long defended, which tells you that this is not just politics. It's actually a true, true deep belief that he holds in defense of that type of rhetoric and slogan. And look, I think people are trying to work behind the scenes to work with Mamdani, but I think the record is pretty clear on where he stands on a lot of key issues that are well to the extreme of where New York City voters are.
Yeah, I want you to hear what this guy, Matt Slater, he's a local lawmaker, knows him well, and said this. He also knows AOC. I think he went to high school with her. Cut 16.
The fact that you have AOC, who I like to call Sandy from the suburbs, bringing him to Washington, this is going to help propel her for the 2028 election. There's no question about it. And it also is just going to green light Democrats all across the country to embrace this communist agenda, because that is where the energy, as you just said, is going. And so that's a very dangerous proposition. Again, not just for New York City, not just for New York State, but the entire country.
I think so too. He's obviously a Republican. What about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I was looking. The Mamdani folks put out a poll this week, and it was stunning in that he's still only at 40%, or 41%, I think, in their poll. But it showed this remarkable generational divide, even in the general election. Whereas Cuomo was actually winning 45 older millennials and over. Cuomo was actually beating Mamdani in the general, according to this poll. But among under 45, Mamdani led, I think it was 68 or 69 to 7 or something dramatic along those lines, winning by like 60 plus points. That is, I think, where the Democratic Party's future is leaning towards. Like the socialist, I mean, it's not just globalize the intifada, it's an embrace of socialism over capitalism. The defund the police rhetoric got purchased with the younger left. Mm-hmm. There's a whole host of issues where the left has just very, very exotic, radical views at odds with almost everyone else, even in a liberal city like New York City. Now, if this is a one-on-one race between Mamdani and a you know, regular type of Democrat, or even a more mainstream Republican, frankly, I think it would be a good chance the other candidate would win. But because of this unique ballot situation where you have two different Democrats on the ballot plus Curtis Sliwa, the Republican, Mamdani is not doing that well. But it's being obscured by the fact that the anti-Mamdani vote is being split in these three different directions.
So I want you to hear, ICE is the new target for Democrats of all stripes, and they're saying that they're the problem. And I think it's important to hear from ICE's perspective. And that's what was on our channel yesterday. Selena from ICE said this, cut 23.
I'm very proud to say that I work for ICE, and to have to take off my polo or, you know, hide behind so that way my family is not put in danger or my colleagues are not put in danger. And I'm very, like I said, proud to work for ICE and to have to kind of put my polo down or my badge away for the safety of us.
She has to take it off when she leaves the building. But people now, they have 40 AGs, Democratic Attorney Generals, who want to pass legislation, which won't do it, to make ICE take their masks off as if they're the problem. At the same time, yesterday, news broke that one of these fugitives, illegal fugitives, they caught up to him, took off their ankle bracelet. And when they caught up to him, he tried to pull away and dragged one of the ICE agents for a short period of time, she got all scraped up. And now Democrats are saying it's ICE that's too aggressive. Now, we know that the border, basically the Democrats have given up on and said, you're right, we should have enforced the border. What about when it comes to ICE? How does this play out?
Well, look, I think on the issue of border security, immigration, Republicans, I mean, that was one of the big driving factors in Trump's victory. And by the way, the Big Beautiful Bill, what was one of the big components of this Big Beautiful Bill? It was the tax cuts, the extension of the tax cuts. There was also a lot of extra funding for ICE. I mean, there's going to be a lot of cash infusion to immigration enforcement as part of that legislation. So, look, I think that the devil's going to be in the – I mean, the fact is that people in the country want criminals deported. They want the border to be secured. Trump has campaigned on those issues. And they also, like, they look at these cases like what we saw in California this past week, where you had minors, you know, illegal immigrants working in like a marijuana factory, and Democrats going to the wall to defend that those practices, seemingly. Like, that is not where the public is. But I think and we've talked about this before, Brian, I think where the Republicans could hit some rough territories if they try to deport people who are here seeking humanitarian protections, or people who have been here for quite some time and have been good standing citizens and they're not criminals. And I think that is where the political risk is for Republicans. I think they have a lot of running room, and a lot of Americans, if you look at the polls, want stronger border enforcement and they support the general mission of ICE. But it's when any potential abuses could run against the party in charge.
True. The other big story with Republicans is what's going on with this Epstein trial. And they're talking about how let down the bloggers are and others, Theo Vaughn and I guess Joe Rogan and others. They feel as though they were let down because Theo Vaughn says, yeah, the president said he wouldn't support the Ukraine war. Now he is. And some people say no Middle East wars. Why'd you bomb? And now they're saying Pam Bondi, where's the Epstein's list? Here's the president yesterday. Cut 30.
What Biden did is he ended our policies, went to his policies. He didn't have a policy. Some lunatic around the desk had a policy. Whoever operated the auto pen had a policy, which is, by the way, I think the biggest scandal. That's the scandal they should be talking about, not Jeffrey Epstein. The scandal you should be talking about is the auto pen, because I think it's the biggest scandal, one of them in American history.
But they're not. They're talking about this. Where does Trump go from here?
Well, look, I don't think he's, from a public relations standpoint, kind of feeding the beast and responding on Truth Social and sounding defensive, frankly, in the last week. I don't think it was a smart decision. I also think that there was a CNN poll that came out yesterday that showed, of all the people surveyed, how many people in the survey thought the Epstein issue was the biggest one that's on their mind right now? Only one out of, you know, 1,000. So, I mean, I think it's important to kind of distinguish. Yes, people may have concerns. You obviously see the conversation, the skepticism on social media. That said, is this going to move the needle politically, or are people abandoning Trump or changing their political views because of all the conversation about the Epstein scandal and, you know, the skepticism that everything's on the up and up? No. I mean, people care about the economy. They care about immigration. They care about crime. This is just a summer conversation starter on social media. And I always say this. I say this on the left. I say this on the right. Social media is not reflective of real life. It doesn't reflect the actual politics on the ground. And I think Trump is that. The one thing I will say is, in the case of Trump and Bondi and some of the people who have been kind of talking about this issue, I think they've only been feeding the beast, feeding the story by trying to sound defensive about it. I think, you know, this is the type of thing that fills a vacuum when there's a slow news cycle, but it is not the top issue on most voters' minds right now.
Democrats see a vulnerability, are they right?
Well, they see a vulnerability in the moment. I mean... If you look at polls, there's a lot of skepticism, bipartisan skepticism, that, you know, everything about the Epstein case was on the up and up. They want to see all the documents, like if you look at the surveys. But when you ask the same voters, is this a top issue for them when it comes to voting? Not really. So I would bet that there are not many ads or not many attacks about the Epstein case when we get actually down to the campaigns and the midterm election. I think this will be long forgotten by then.
All right. Josh Krasher, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, listen, we come back. 1-866-408-7669. I'll take some of your calls. We'll go around the country, around the world. Don't move.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Tang Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Donald Trump wants to stage a UFC fight on the White House lawn. The last time he staged a fight in D.C., Mike Pence almost died. Actually, there was supposed to be an Epstein joke here, but as it got deleted. Must have probably deleted itself, right? Probably never existed, actually. Let's move on as a country and ignore that.
Oh, that was great. Just some of the SPs last night. I think that was Shane Gillis was fantastic. I think it was pretty good. I think the perfect guy. But he always has a feeling like he's uncomfortable. Is that his thing? Or is it just because he didn't write the stuff?
No, I mean, I think he wrote some of it at least. But it is. I think that's his delivery, because it definitely is uncomfortable watching him. Right? It doesn't flow. But that's his thing. All right. He also did he does a really good Trump impression.
Did he do it last night?
He did. I don't have those cuts, because sort of just telling the story of like when he met Trump, I think at the Super Bowl. But when he talks like Trump, he's on point. We'll get it for later on the show.
All right. The other thing I thought was interesting is Jason Kelce, his podcast on with his brother yesterday, said, I'm used to being told what to do. That's what I do. I want my wife to nag me. Cut 41.
What I respond to really well is nagging. Please nag the out of me. Tell me to get my lazy up and take the trash out. And she's like, Jason, I don't want to tell you to do these things. And I'm like, I get that. I'm just letting you know it's not going to get done unless you tell me to do it. I've been coached my whole life. I want people to tell me. Otherwise, I need that. I need that coaching.
Yeah, but isn't he also a captain? Captains are supposed to lead.
They're supposed to lead, but you could. I understand the coaching, though, like wanting to be told what to do. If he's always like been the athlete.
When you're an adult, you shouldn't want to be called, told what to do. To me, it's...
Well, it's fair, but...
So I asked Gronk that, Rob Gronkowski, and I played that clip, and here's what he told me on Fox and Friends, Cup 42.
I do need to be nagged in ways, and that's actually why I loved... The reason why I loved going to the New England Patriots when I got drafted there is because Coach Belichick and Tom Brady and all my other coaches were always nagging me to be a better player out on the football field and always yelling at me to do the right things. So, yes, getting nagged definitely gets you to that level to accomplish things in life.
But in other words, to put your shoes away, to put your stuff away, to wash the dishes, you need to be nagged?
Yeah, a little bit. I really like to do the drawers around the house. Camille, she nags me a little bit, but not too much.
Gotcha.
Only about house things, you know, about what type of furniture is in the house. So it makes sense. And she has that touch that makes everything look beautiful. So her nagging is usually always right.
Yeah. So I guess they like to be ordered around. I mean, they look like self-confident guys, but they just don't. They want to be number two.
I mean, it makes they were successful in football. They've always been told what to do. That's going to be their excuse as to why they didn't just see their clothes in the middle of the floor and pick them up. They need to be nagged to pick up their clothes.
I agree with that.
Yeah, do you think that the women like nagging?
No, no one wants to be like, be an adult, put your clothes in the hamper, move your shoes. But it's what we have to do because most men, not all, don't put their laundry in the hamper.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't be the problem, but just little things like caps off the toothpaste. You need to be nagged about that. You need to know to close the front door. I don't know. I'm really, really upset with the stance of these two men's men.
Like, well, it's
these
two guys who get nagged. That's why it bothers you.
Oh, I don't.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. I'm here right at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Mike Rowe's going to be on with us shortly. Bottom of the hour, he's got a sense that the AI is not leaving the blue-collar worker behind. It's leaving the coders behind. And Mike Rowe just put this on Twitter, or X, whatever you want to call it, and said they told everyone to stop mining and learn to code. But now AI is coming from the coders. They're not coming for the welders and the blue-collar workers, which is 100% true. When you build the infrastructure, you still need an infrastructure built. Sean Davis is standing by, CEO and co-founder of the Federalist, former economic policy advisor for Governor Rick Perry. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I know it's a hoax. It's started by Democrats. It's been run by the Democrats for 4 years. You had Christopher Wray and these characters and Comey before him. It's all been a big hoax. It's perpetrated by the Democrats.
Donald Trump reeling off win after win, including two yesterday with a crypto bill and a rescission package. But the party's obsessed with something else, Epstein, and it's driving him nuts.
Number two.
It should not be lost that the president of the United States of America is using ICE as his own militarized force to engender and institute anxiety and fear.
Yep, there you go, Brandon Johnson, failed mayor of Chicago. ICE reality check. Another agent is seriously hurt because of irresponsible politicians like the one you just heard, who have made them the enemy when they're actually doing great work for the U.S.
Number one.
I think he's a very personable, smart young man.
Zohran Mamdani is an incredible talent. It's hard not to be won over.
You have AOC and Zohran. That's a winning combo.
Really? For who? For what? Russia? That's unbelievable. That is a little of the Democratic reaction to 11 people showing up to meet the Democratic winner of the mayoral primary in New York City. This guy is the only people that could stop him. Cuomo, Sliwa, and Adams. One should emerge to try to take him out. And Mamdani still with between a 5 and 10 point lead. Let's bring in Sean Davis, CEO and co-founder of The Federalist. Sean, are you shocked the Democrats are rallying around? The hottest politicians are Bernie Sanders, AOC, and now Mamdani?
I'm shocked that the Democrat Party is going hard commie left. I wish I could say I'm shocked. I think it's sadly predictable, given the trajectory of that party over the last 10 to 15 years.
But you would think that they would have learned and said, well, Trump is talking about the border, men out of women's sports, talked about getting rid of the pronouns and stopping the political correctness. They would read the room a little bit and say, okay, maybe we're too far over here.
Yeah, I guess there's like two different directions you can go to grab that section of populists. You could come back to the middle, start paying attention to blue-collar workers, caring about the things that people who work with their hands for a living care about. Or I guess you could go the other direction and go full commie. And what's interesting about this, you've got, you know, Mamdani, ethnic guy, family isn't from here. And you'd think, oh, well, that'll attract a lot of the immigrants in New York. But it's actually the exact opposite. When you looked at the results, it was all of the really wealthy white liberals in New York City who loved Mamdani, and it was, you know, the blue collar immigrants who were down with Cuomo. So it, to me, it shows that the Democrat Party is being controlled by a bunch of highly left wing, wealthy white people, which is just bizarre that they're going in this direction. I guess their guilt compels them to do stupid things so they can feel like they're actually looking out for the little guy.
But they actually don't know what to do with this guy. Jeffries, Schumer, Hochul. Listen to Hochul yesterday. I'll play some of it. She's trying to figure out something nice to say. Cut six.
I am not saying he said certain things, but when he's asked to take a position that affirmatively rejects that, up until now, that has been declined. Okay, so you can read into that anything you want, but I would say that there has been an effort now, knowing that after I've had conversations, and I'm not the first to raise it with him, that this is language that is, you know, extremely hurtful, painful for people in the Jewish community to hear, that he understood that, and I'll give him credit for acknowledging that, and seems like yesterday he was working to explain what his real feelings are. So I'll leave it at that.
Is this a joke? Working to explain what his real feelings are? His real feelings, we already know his real feelings. Globalize the infitada is something he believes. He says, I don't use it, but I understand the sentiment. That's he's working towards explaining it.
Yeah, he said he wanted to globalize the infitada. He said he wants to defund the police. There's no ambiguity about what the guy believes. And the problem that the Democrat leaders have is that what they've traditionally done is they like to have the Howard Dean and Bernie Sanders and AOC types fire up the base, and they can use them to collect those people, but they're never actually going to let them have any power. And they've been able to do that because at least at the national level, they've been able to bring someone in who's more of a Democrat leadership type to kind of just, they'll win, they'll pat Bernie Sanders on the head, they'll say, hey, we'll let you stay around, but obviously you're not going to be in charge of anything. And the problem they have with Mamdani is that Cuomo is so radioactive. Cuomo was supposed to be the type of Democrat politician to beat the commie left candidate, but he failed. And so now they're stuck with this guy who's winning, and they can't trash him because they, you know, they don't want Adams to win. So they're completely stuck. As a non-New Yorker, and I'm sorry, I find it hilarious, mainly because I'm not going to have to deal with the consequences. But it's fascinating to watch the Democrat Party and the commies basically catch they're the dog who caught the car now. And Democrat leadership has no idea what to do with it.
They really don't. But, you know, since you're saying, let's change gears a little bit. Donald Trump is this guy who's on every detail. I mean, if there's an election for a party chairmanship in a city, he will keep calling up. He'll be calling up to find out who's winning and why and who's best for us. Now he's saying, in order to keep the House, he's saying, I want to redistrict Texas and gerrymander Texas. And now in turn, California's saying, maybe we'll redistrict California. Can you foresee a situation where Texas is redistricted to make it more Republican?
No, absolutely. And especially after the games that were played with the last census, you know, we know they're always playing games. They're monkeying around with the data so that, you know, the Democrats who run these agencies can make sure their states get more people. I think the Republican Party has probably been disadvantage to the tune of 10 or 15 seats just from census games. And so when you have an opportunity in a state that you totally control, like Texas, of course they're going to go in and try and reapportion to get the most seats possible. That's politics. And I get that people get mad about that. If California wants to do it, they can have at it. I mean, there's hardly any Republicans left there anymore. But, you know, New York did it to the Republicans. California does it. This is politics. It's the nature of the beast. I genuinely don't understand why people get so mad or pretend to be so mad about it. Happens all the time. Don't hate the player, hate the game.
So California also had found out yesterday that the president is going to pull the plug on their high-speed rail. They have not laid one mile of track. They've pulled the plug on $4 billion of unspent federal funds from California. Trump says it's an ill-conceived, unnecessary project and a total waste of taxpayer money. Says over the last 16 years, roughly $15 billion spent, not one high-speed track has been laid. Sean Duffy said this is California's fault. Governor Newsom and the complicit Democrats have enabled this waste for years. Now, coming back is Gavin Newsom. He said Trump wants to hand China the future and abandon the Central Valley. We won't let them. With projects like the Texas high-speed rail failing to take off, can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I don't have a clue what the China talk is. I mean, I've been hearing high-speed rail talk for like 20 years since I started working out of college, 20, 30 years. It never works. The U.S. is just not built for it. It's too big. We're too spread out. And yet it's always this pipe dream, generally from people who know that they're going to get a free lunch from the federal government because it's the federal government and the taxpayer paying for all of it. And good for Trump for pulling the plug on this thing. If you can't lay a single track after 10 or 15 or 20 years and you spent $10 or $15 billion, pull the plug. Maybe let's just make gas more affordable so people can drive back and forth to where they want to go.
That would be a very interesting. Do you think that Gavin Newsom's made some gains in his South Carolina tour?
I don't know. The guy, I have such a hard time watching him because I feel like I'm watching just a stone cold sociopath who will lie about anything, whether it's that tour, his new podcast, him on the Sean Ryan podcast. The guy's like a Joker-esque movie villain to me. So it's hard for me to say whether he's gained anything or not, because whenever I see him, I just see a stone cold liar who will say anything.
I find him totally inauthentic. It's going to be interesting to see if someone has the guts to stand up like Senator Fetterman and just say, hey, by the way, that left wing, that went for mayoral candidate in New York City, I can't subscribe to that. We'll see what happens. I won't be doing it. Jeffries and Schumer will put himself in the box to do it. But if I'm running for president, that'll be one way to separate myself. I'd love to see it. And lastly, do you believe that the Republicans are right to stay on top of the auto pen story with the Bidens? Yesterday, the chief of staff for the first lady, who had all this influence, same with everyone calls in the long time, Anthony Brunell, the work husband of Jill, who had an outweighed influence on the administration. All he did is take the fifth. The doctor takes the fifth. Are they making any progress?
Oh, I think it's a huge scandal. And I think the fact that you have these people taking the fifth and that they're retaining criminal defense lawyers, I think the House and the DOJ absolutely need to keep going after it. And it's not because we want to go after Joe Biden or we don't care about his very serious mental and physical health problems. It's that you cannot, in a democratic republic like we have a cabal of people who weren't elected to do anything, take over the powers of the presidency and do things under color of law with an auto pen if the person who actually was elected, in this case, Joe Biden, didn't know anything about it. And I think that New York Times story this week was devastating for Biden and the people who worked for him, because they admitted, oh yeah, we made changes. We signed off on stuff without him knowing it. And if you read the transcript of the interview where Biden says, oh, I knew about everything, I don't think the guy knew where he was when he was giving that interview. It was a bunch of gobbledygook.
Right. He said the story is contradicted. He said, I told people, he never says I laid out the criteria for them to do it. He says he knew everything. On every single one, there's no way he knew 4,000 pardons. There's no way he could have signed them. I don't think so. And number two is he let out some double murderers.
Yeah, it's horrible. And they actually admitted in there, you know, he didn't even know the names of the people whose pardons he was allegedly signing off on. The staff admitted they were going and making changes and using the auto pen to sign off on pardons and clemency grants that he never approved. So this is a massive scandal, and it's not a scandal for Joe Biden himself. He was the president. It's a scandal for everyone under him who is seizing the powers of the presidency illegally without the person who is actually elected knowing anything about it. And everyone knows he didn't know everything that was going on under him.
Sean, thanks so much. Sean Davis of The Federalist, appreciate the time. Nice for you to zoom in. When we come back, your turn. We'll go to Daytona, Valdosta, and Dallas. 1-866-408-7669. Then Mike Rowe at the bottom of the hour. He is fired up. I'll let you know why.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The alternative is one of two things. You're going to either get all these things and make the economy strong, or you're going to literally have perhaps a depression where you people, so rich, so beautiful, so nice to look at, will be totally busted. And let's see how long your wife stays with you. You're beautiful. She'll stay with you for about 3 weeks and she'll say, darling, I can't take it anymore. I can't take it anymore, darling. I'm leaving you. I said to one guy, he's a very, very unattractive man, but he's smart and he's rich. And I said, you better hope we get this thing passed because your wife will be gone within about 2 minutes. He said, you're right.
President having some fun a little bit earlier in the week at a big event. And one of the events, I think, was at that tech conference over in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Gary in Daytona, Florida. Gary, expect a lot of people coming to you if Mom Donnie wins this election.
Yeah, we already have a lot of New York license plates that haven't switched over. But a couple of takeaways from it, just watching what's happened. And watching Newsom's podcast and then seeing him, I mean, he looks like he graduated partially from the Newsom. I mean, the hair, the clothes, how he acts with his hands, and he's the smile. I mean, plus it's incredible that we know with his parents, we know so much about his parents and him, and we know nothing about Matthew Crooks when that happened. But he actually said he could move back in with his parents if everything went south. I mean, it's going to be a disaster if they don't straighten out their who's running and who's raising money up there.
Yeah, we'll have to see where it goes. Rich is over in Dallas. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Brain, how's it going, buddy? My name is Butch. It's not Rich. Rich has an I and a Butch has a U in it. But anyway, I heard you as a stand-up comedian. You have the pleasure right now of talking to the future winner of the DFW Last Comic Standing. And I would consider it a pleasure of giving you the honor of giving me a couple tickets to your Dallas show.
Giving you tickets, Rich. Sure. Butch, excuse me. Well, it's coming up August 23rd. We know that.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know,
I can't wait.
Stay in touch. We should be doing something with KLIF in order to give some giveaway. So stand by. We haven't really decided. We still have a month to go. But go to BrianKilmeade.com. It'll be the best show you've ever seen. Roy, listen at WVGA in Valdosta, Georgia.
Morning, Brian. How's things going?
Great.
Well, I just want to comment on the nagging thing. I mean, Kelce and Gronk both need to grow a set of cojones.
Thank you.
I mean, they, you know, even in the Bible, it says that it's better to live in the tight corner of a rooftop than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. And for reference, you can't get any better than the Bible. So they need to grow up.
I know. Last thing you want to be nagged. They said they need to be told what to do because, in case you don't know, and they're just having fun in the podcast. Jason Kelce said, I'm used to being coached. I'm used to being told where to go and where to be and what to wear and what time to be there, what hotel room to get. And he said, I need my wife to nag me. But I have news for you. Nobody wants to nag you, and nobody likes being nagged. I guess if you're a professional player and you've already made $100 million, you're probably making more as a broadcaster, maybe you need to be reminded to put your shoes away, or maybe you can get a butler to put your shoes away, perhaps. I'm not really sure. But it's an interesting dynamic when it comes to relationships. You see these big, tough guys who like to be ordered around. His wife, by the way, is extremely great. Has a great personality, too. Travis and Jason have their own podcast. I think it's top 10 in the country. And then she has one of the top podcasts in the country, too. But most people like this podcast better, according to reports. I haven't seen any official study, but I'm just telling you, that's what America's saying in the big picture. So when we come back, Mike Rowe has an interesting tweet he just sent me. He said, everyone's talking about this, and which Mike Rowe means it's in the Mike Rowe way. He wants me to bring it up. He tweeted this out. Mike Rowe, quote, we've been telling kids for 15 years to learn to code. Well, AI is coming for the coders. It's not coming for the welders, the plumbers, the steam fitters, the pipe fitters. And that's what people are talking about. And that's why he's all dressed up. He's not wearing his blue collar shirt at a big event. And that's why he's going to be on Sunday on One Nation. And he's also going to be on our show in about 5 minutes. Because with the president announcing in Pittsburgh is we're going to get all this energy and $500 million. Well, you got to build buildings, right? You got to build facilities around the natural gas, around the coal plants. And that's where people who can work with their hands step up and step in.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Dario Monde, the head of Anthropic, says, just because it's going to be so revolutionary and so disruptive, you're going to see a massacre of white-collar jobs. The people who do, you know, all the routine things in accounting, in law, in even consulting. What do you think?
I would say if the world runs out of ideas, then productivity gains translates to job loss. But over the course of the last 300 years, 100 years, 60 years even, in the era of computers, not only did productivity go up, employment also went up. Now, the reason for that is because if we have an abundance of ideas, if we were more productive, we could realize that better. Now, of course, in a world of zero-sum games, if you have no more ideas and all you want to do is this, then productivity drives down. It results in job loss.
So that is Jensen Huang being interviewed by Fareed Zakaria, I think, at the Aspen Institute, or he's talking on CNN, I should say. And he's talking about how, you know, with AI is coming, everyone's excited about it, but what's it going to mean for job loss? Well, a lot of it comes to a lot of people are going to be coming for the coders, according to Mike Rowe. If they're not coming from the welders, the plumbers, the steam fitters. And it went on to say, and Mike Rowe said over at Aspen, that Larry Fink of BlackRock or Blackstone or something black says we need 500,000 electricians in the next couple of years. And that's not hyperbole. That is a music to the ears. And I told you so has to be going through Mike Rowe's head. He is Mike Rowe from the Mike Rowe Works Foundation and the host of People You Should Know. Mike, what was it like at the Aspen Institute? They got you to wear a tie.
Did you really just conflate BlackRock and Blackstone and then shrug it off as if a couple of $1 trillion companies are interchangeable?
Yeah, I think in retrospect.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Good for you. Right. Yeah, you also conflated the Aspen Institute with the Energy AI Summit, which just took place in Pittsburgh. And it's an understandable conflation because every time you turn around, a room full of billionaires is convening somewhere in the country to talk about the existential threat that you and I have been discussing now for like 10 years, yep, vis-a-vis our workforce. So, look, I'm not one to take victory laps, but Brian, the headlines have caught up to us in a way that is absolutely undeniable. Larry Fink at the Aspen Institute addressed a big crowd of swells, and he was crystal clear. 500,000 electricians just in the $12 trillion portfolio that he oversees, right? These guys have a whole different look at what's going on with our workforce. Now, yesterday and the day before in Pittsburgh, President Trump showed up along with an enormous crowd of people who raised $92 billion in the room to invest in building data centers, which, as Jensen Huang basically just described, are actually AI factories. This is an enormous play by Pennsylvania and Senator McCormick and Fetterman, both of whom came together in a nonpartisan way to get behind this push. And I got invited simply to remind the crowd that creating jobs is very different than creating enthusiasm for those jobs. And I essentially begged them to carve off a little chunk of that money that was raised and use it to promote the opportunities at hand. So basically, it's the same drum I've been beating for the last 17 years.
So people that are panicking, you said, as you sent to me, they told you to, hey, if I think it was Hillary Clinton that told a bunch of coal miners, learn to code.
Yes.
And you said they're coming for the coders. They're not coming for the welders and the steam fitters. You want to expand
on
that?
Yeah, that got an applause line. We were at the Carnegie Mellon Institute. I mean, this is like a real pinnacle in an institution of higher learning. And these guys got the memo, too. We have, for the last 30 years, been elevating our white-collar portion of the workforce at the expense of the blue-collar portion. And we have been sort of intimating that the robots and the technology that is certainly on the horizon, if not already here, is coming for the blue-collar jobs. It's turning out to be something quite opposite. It's the white-collar positions. I'm painting with a broad brush, but paralegal and anything creative, writing in general, coding, these are looking very wobbly right now. The AI is going to come for those. And I agree with what Jensen was saying. You know, there's disruption and there's going to be a result, I think, that's impossible to accurately predict long term. But short term, we are entering the golden age of plumbing, steam fitting, pipe fitting, welding, HVAC. Those jobs are not going to be impacted by AI. And those are the jobs that are being created in Pennsylvania right now. And those are the opportunities that parents and guidance counselors ought to be zeroing in on.
Are they? Have you noticed a change? I know you want the change. You've been calling for the change. You predicted it. But have you noticed a change bringing vocational training back to schools? Have you noticed more people trying to apply for scholarships at MicroWorks?
Yeah, and that's truly a micro example, right? And it's anecdotal. I mean, my foundation is modest. We've given away about $13 million in these work ethic scholarships. And this year, we have 10 times the applicants that we did a year before. And if you look only at that, Brian, you could conclude, hey, you're killing it. And modesty aside, we are in my little world. In macro works, in the United States of America, I'd be ringing the alarm bell if I had one right now, because not a week goes by where I don't hear from somebody like the American Submarine Industrial Base, who needs 140,000 welders and electricians. 140,000. The automotive industry needs 80,000 in collision repair and technicians. Energy? Don't even get me started, man. It's like 500,000. The numbers are mind-boggling, and it's awkward to talk about this, especially at an event when I'm sitting there next to the president and we're announcing all of these new jobs that are about to be created. And I'm just sitting there biting my lip going, look, somebody has to point out the fact that we have 500,000 open positions in manufacturing right now, today. What are we going to do if we create 2 million manufacturing jobs? Where are you going to get the workers? So, look, I'm going to testify on your show this weekend on the TV and everything, and I'm probably going to rant and rave a little bit, because I think this is the missing piece in all the conversations around job creation, going all the way back to Obama in 2009 when he promised 3 million shovel-ready jobs in the Highway Infrastructure Act to a country that was conspicuously ambivalent about picking up a shovel. It's the same thing now. You can't, like, we're just clinging to this Depression-era artifact that says, oh, you want to solve unemployment? Just create more opportunity. Sorry, there are 7.6 million open positions in the country right now. We don't have an opportunity problem. And while we might have a skills gap, we also have a will gap. And if we don't hit that thing head on, we're going to just keep pushing the boulder up the hill, I'm afraid.
Well, not only that, too, I think that the stat is there are 7 million people eligible to work that aren't working. Because that was the Medicaid conversation I was just having with that big bill that President Trump just passed. He's like, well, the problem is a lot of people are just getting insurance and they're refusing to work. So we have to have a work requirement to get people moving.
Yeah. Look, you're going to piss a lot of people off with that, because it's going to get very political very quickly, and your friends on the right are going to tell you that this is a function of laziness and the human condition, and your friends on the left are going to say the jobs don't pay enough money and you're dealing with greedy, rapacious capitalists. All I can tell you, again, anecdotally, MicroWorks has assisted 2,500 people. The majority are making six figures. Many of them, they get a CDL license, and 3 weeks later, they're making 120 grand driving a truck. 6 months later, they're making 150 grand welding. So I tend to think, with regard to that stat, which, by the way, comes from a book called Men Without Work by Nicholas Eberstadt that your listeners will love. Are they listeners or viewers, Brian? I can't keep it straight. Am I on TV or both?
We got both, because we're Zooming. We're Zooming.
How about that?
Yeah.
Look, it's a terrific book. And what it really does is it digs in to something that's never happened in our country before, at least not in peacetime, where you've got 7 million able-bodied men who are not only not working, but not looking for work. That is amazing. And I'm not in either camp. I'm not here to say they're lazy, and I'm not here to say the opportunity. I'm just saying it's a real number. And isn't it interesting how 7.5 million open jobs kind of sort of correlates a bit with 7 million
yes.
men who are not really interested in dealing with that. So throw in immigration,
right?
Throw in all the other hot button topics. And in the end, it's just math. And finally, here's the most chilling number. 7.6 million open jobs is a big number. How about 5 and 2? 5 tradesmen retire every year and 2 replace them. That's the ratio.
Mm-hmm.
5 out, 2 in. It's been that way for a decade. So you're dealing with bad math. You're dealing with downward demographic pressure. You're dealing with all the unintended consequences of yanking shop class out of high school. And now the chickens have come home to roost. And guys like Larry Fink at BlackRock and Blackstone and Wells Fargo. I get calls every week now from big companies that don't have any direct skin in the game vis-a-vis blue-collar frontline workers, but they are highly motivated to see this problem corrected, because if we don't do it, our workforce will remain out of balance, and now we don't have enough submarines.
So I know. We have to go outside our country with these contracts because we have to rapidly build ships and submarines. We do have that advantage right now of China. I don't know for how much longer. But, Mike, when it came up in Pittsburgh, at Aspen, around the country, have they connected the two? So, for example, we need 500,000 electricians. But did they just leave, or did they say, this is my plan to get them? They like to plan for the future, getting rare earth and things to that nature to build the machines. But does the president realize this? Have people connected the dots?
Look, I wouldn't deign to look into the mind of the president. I think he surely must have run some sort of calculus. I'll tell you, I think part of the solution is going to come from areas nobody's talking about. I met with a company in Pittsburgh called Impossible Minerals. These guys are going to be huge. They're mining. They've got contracts in place to mine the seafloor in an environmentally responsible way. But the resources that we're going to need are down there. And I'd never heard of them before. And I think they're about to become a giant thing. I don't ultimately know what the solution is going to be here, but I'll just repeat, it's awkward because so many of us, especially our elected officials, they don't want to look into the lens and talk about a will gap. They don't want to talk about declining birth rates. They don't want to, because it's just not flattering to our country, and it doesn't get people elected, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So I just find myself constantly in this weird position of saying, of course I was rooting for Obama with 3 million shovel-ready jobs. Of course I'm rooting for Trump with 3 million new jobs in manufacturing with all this reshoring. But I just hope to God somebody somewhere steps back and says, look, the opportunities alone are not enough to inspire, amplify, and motivate this generation to run toward them. And the money's not enough either. If it were that simple, they would offer more money and people would beat a pathway to their door. But I'm here to tell you that's not what I've seen. So there's something missing, and it has to do with PR, communication, messaging. And I'll leave you with this, because I know you got to jump, but when these guys ask me where the skilled workers are, we've looked everywhere, Mike, says the Maritime Institute. We can't find them. Do you know where they are? I say yes. They say where? I say the eighth grade. That's where they are.
All right.
That's where you got to go get.
And by the way, the Secretary of Education should be putting that back in. Just like pursuing anti-Semitism, we should be pushing for vocational training. Metal shop and wood shop. Mike Rowe, thanks so much. I'll talk to you on Sunday night, 10 o'clock. This is you got it. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Just finishing up before we get to the top of the hour, just a few stories we have not been able to get to. Let's first off start here when we find out if there's more to know.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
An awkward moment at a Coldplay concert. They were doing shots, random shots of the crowd. And it looks like they got a couple at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough over in Massachusetts. It looks like they caught a couple having an affair. Can you explain some of this, yeah. Allison?
So they're panning to the crowd. And they're like, oh, look at this cute couple. And it's the guy standing behind the woman and his arms are right around her. I mean, sort of just under her boobs. Like you definitely look like they're in a couple. And as soon as the camera goes to them, they just like scatter like roaches when the lights come on.
So what are they saying?
So now if you want to hear the Coldplay, they call them out. We have some of the audio.
Let's listen.
Oh, look at these two. All right, come on. You're okay? Uh-oh, what? Either they're having an affair or they're just very shy.
Well, the internet, I guess, went and found out that he's married and she knows.
Yeah, he's married with two kids, apparently. She might be married, too, but he's the CEO of a company and she is the CPO, which is the chief people officer. So imagine going into work today after that blowing up online. I mean...
Wow, that is terrible. Next, Donald Trump, another win. He convinced Coca-Cola to use real sugar cane instead of whatever else they were using, but it had some corn syrup in it, so I was not happy. But they said that he is now, and a Truth Social post says, I've been speaking to Coke about using real cane sugar in Coke, and they've agreed to do it. I'd like to thank all of those authorities at Coca-Cola. They'll be a very good move by them. You will see it's just better. Is this good for? I mean, you shouldn't be having Coke anyway, should you?
Yeah, but if you have the sugar versus the corn syrup, that's a good thing. But apparently, Coca-Cola has refused to confirm Trump's recipe tweak claim.
So this might not be true?
It might not be. They're not confirming it. So we'll see. But yeah, so we'll find out.
Well, Trump's post came as HHS Secretary RFK continues to push against the fake ingredients in stuff. But isn't Coca-Cola? That's not exactly.
Well, I mean, you want more, like, ingredients that you, when you hear them, you know what it is. Like, sugar, you know what that is. You know, corn syrup, yeah, maybe not. And then there's a bunch of chemicals.
Next, Donald Trump pulls the plug on the California high-speed rail, and as usual, Gavin Newsom's upset by that. Why could he possibly be upset? They, over 16 years, they spent $15 billion and not put one set, not one mile of track in. Nobody wants it. It's in California. Originally, they wanted to do high-speed trains, but they finance it, but they don't do it. Gavin Newsom wants to hand China, he says, Trump wants to hand China the future and abandon the Central Valley. We won't let him do it. With projects like the Texas high-speed rail failing to take off, we are miles ahead of others. You are not. Just make a railroad.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.